Hi everybody. Fine. I hope you are well prepared for today's session. Now, before I proceed on this session on import-export management, let me introduce myself. I'm Professor Vishnu Sippy. Basically, I am a custom broker, but my specialty has always been international trade, foreign trade, expertise on exports and customs and regulatory functions. Before we actually go into this chapter, I would like to understand one thing. Why do you want to get into import-export management? I know your reply would be, it's a very fine career, it's a very lucrative career, or it's a very high-flying career. I'll be able to go throughout the world traveling and enjoying life throughout the world. Stop. Don't go high-flying. It's all a dream, a sweet dream. Suddenly you will wake up and find out that no, I have been dreaming. This is not the major reason. My question is, have you got 24 hours in one day? I want a reply. Yeah, do I get a reply? Yes. No. Yes. Yes. I hear a yes again, but I hear a no again. Oh. Confusion, yes, no, confusion, stop. You cannot afford to get into any type of confusions if you want to go for foreign trade. You have got to have a very straightforward functioning methodology. Why I have said 25 hours? Your international trade is dealing with people across continents. Maybe here in India, you are sleeping at the night, midnight, you are sleeping, having sweet dreams. At the other end of the world, your client is fully woken up and he is doing his regular office work and he is more interested in getting his products to his place. So he will suddenly phone you and ask you, where is my material? I wanted it yesterday. It has still not come to me. What are you doing? Suddenly you start waking up and you find you are not able to reply to him properly. That is the time when your answer to your client will be most crucial. You have got to be fully awake to what he wants. That's the primary requisite. Let me start on introducing international trade first, then import-export or foreign trade is a part of international trade. What is international trade? If I give you this slide, I would say pause, please go through this slide. This slide gives you the overall picture of international trade. That is, A is you, your the exporter, B is destination, that is your buyer, and in between you have a barrier, that is the customs procedures involved at your origin point and destination point, and all the other regulatory functions, etc., etc. Then comes the transport chain. From your place, you may use a truck or rail, go to a transshipment point, stuff containers, and then take it by maritime or air, or maybe nowadays you can go by road or rail also, depending on landlocking countries. Then reach your destination, complete custom procedures, then by road or rail, it will go ultimately to your buyer's warehouse or factory. Physical flow, you have got different angles of flow. you have to study, check and study that very, very thoroughly. That gives you a full picture. Now, this is your overall international trade flow chart.
Friends, when we look at chapter number one of this book, let us see the topics which we would be covering under this particular chapter. First is we will go to the ancient foreign commerce which has been taking place since time immemorial. And then we will look at the entire gamut of international trade. And next, what are the gains? Unless and until you don't have gains, no sense in entering into it. And globalization and international trade, they work hand in hand. Next, we will look at the foreign trade, that is all import-export functions. Then what are the trade barriers as far as foreign trade is concerned? There is a balance of trade between the foreign exchange earned and outgo, earned for export, outgo for import. And of course, we will have to look at the global events which has occurred in the last few years, which are impacting the entire gamut of international trade. And we have got international trading partners with whom we deal for import-export more often. So they are considered to be our international trading partners. Then you require a certain set of management skills. We will look at management skills for international trade. And above all, most important is you need to have a foreign language as far as international trade is concerned. At least one or two foreign languages are definitely required. Let's go step by step.
Now, when we look at the ancient foreign commerce, we had in the beginning trade relations, trade going on from the African countries, especially Somali Sultanates, and then coming to India, Arabia, Egypt. Most of the trade was via Egypt, and along with Arabia, India, China also was important. The first important port of call for any international trade was Cambay. Cambay was a kingdom at that time in Gujarat. It is there in Gujarat even today. And ships from Cambay sailed to Africa with cloth and spices and all. And in return, they came back with gold, wax, ivory, because ivory trade was on a very high level. Well, a lot of African elephants are available, so ivory trade was very freely being done. Of course, today it's banned. The primary factor was that trading was created to get abundance of various items which is not available in their country. And the first person who pioneered the international trade was Vasco da Gama in 1498. And he started with European spices trade. Now, what is the importance of European spice trade? In Europe, there were no spices at that time. Spices were available only in our Indian subcontinent. And that spice was in very great demand in the European countries. It was treated as gold. So, flow of spices went from India to Europe, of course, controlled by the Egyptians. This helped in the age of discovery in Europe. And the spices brought to Europe from our side was really very, very costly over there, sometimes rivaling gold also as a commodity. Another aspect of the trading was China. Chinese silk was very much in requirement during those days. all the countries of the world. And what is now known as the Silk Route was created from China to Europe. And especially during the Han Dynasty, Chinese Dynasty, the Silk Route was one of the most famous route for international trade. Of course, that doesn't mean only silk started moving. Other products also started moving. Trade on this route was a very significant factor because it helped developing civilization in the Indian subcontinent. Many other goods and technologies were traded, traveled along the Silk Route. Not only the goods, but there was cultural trade also amongst the civilization along its entire route. Cultural civilization, as you know, our Indian civilization was the oldest amongst those days. And we traded our culture also at that time. Chinese also traded their culture. It was Silk Route and Spice Route. Both of these were important routes for the foreign trade or international trade. Apart from this, the northern route was by caravans moving from the Arabian countries to China. That means when the trade started, it was a two-way trade. Silk went to European countries, African countries, and Arabian countries, and from there, the caravans brought back dates, saffron powder, pistachio, nuts, etc. And most important point was sandalwood was in very great demand from India. And the caravans took silk brocade, lacquerware, porcelain. These were all very famous in China. That was the inter-country trade being carried on. Most important factor was there was no money exchange. It was a barter trading. That means trading one goods with another type of goods. It was all barter trading. At that time, there was no money exchanging. Let us come to international trade. What is international trade? I know you will all say trade between two nations and exchange of goods and service, etc., etc., etc. But it is not so narrow as you think it to be. It also describes all commercial transactions, whether private or government, sales, investments, logistics, and transportation. These are all part of international trade. It's not only goods and services being exchanged between two countries. Private companies will take these transactions for profit, of course. And this type of trade gives to a world economy in which the prices or supply and demand affect and are counter-affected by global events. Mind you, global effects, global events will affect the trade. All studies have suggested that barriers to trade are major cause of extreme underdevelopment. The countries which promote barriers to trade from their country to other countries or from other countries to their countries, they are amongst the poorest. Because barriers does not help the economic upliftment at all. Economy, if it is closed to the trade, is one which becomes inefficient, laggard firms, protected firms. We were the same prior to 1991. India was also part of it. But on the other hand, countries that have reduced trade barriers and increased the share of imports and exports in their economies, they tend to be among the fastest growing nations. And according to World Bank study, 24 developing nations, mind you, nations are divided into three categories: developed nations, developing countries, and less developed or poor countries. These are the three categories of countries as far as world economy is concerned. In 1980s and 90s, at least 24 developing countries, they opened up the economy. No barriers or very less barriers. They had higher income growth, longer life expectancy, and better schooling, that is better education. That is the importance of international trade. And that is where we have to study these aspects. You would like to know what are the gains? Yes, without gains, no, you would not like to do anything. Okay. The first gain is it is like a new technology that enhances efficiency. Efficiency, efficiency, and efficiency. It promotes dynamism, innovation within the economy. How does this come about? It is by taking advantage of increasing returns from a comparative advantage. What is comparative advantage? Comparative advantage is you do what you can do best and let others do what they do best. Then you exchange their best to your best and you get a comparative advantage. That is, your best of a developed country will be more costly. And the best of a developing country will be less costly. Why? Because labor is cheap in a developing countries. So developed countries, if they want labor intensive, they will always go to developing countries. Recent improvements, manufacturing of quality products in India have been created, of course, pressure of competition from China and elsewhere. I really feel very sad to say that China has gone ahead to supply our product, what we need over here, basics. Take recent examples. Raksha Bandhan, you need Rakhis. The cheapest and most fanciful Rakshas or Rakhis are coming from China. They are being imported from China and not from our local manufacturing. In the past, Rakhis were made by our village industry. They were part of village industry and they helped developing the village industry. Today, China is able to supply them cheaper and we are going after those products. So, we have to now wake up and improve our manufacturing quality, our productivity in India, so that we match the competition from China. I would say not only match, I would say we surpass them. Yes, we can do it and we have to do it if we want to become an economic power. International trade actually is a part of globalization. Now, what is globalization? Today, you find that the world has become so small, integrated. All countries are integrated by the net. Internet has integrated the countries. I would go ahead and say that the entire world has become a village. Increasing integration of trade, finance, people, ideas in one global market. At one click of your computer, you are able to get all information that you want for any products, finance, people, ideas, etc., etc. And most important factor is that the technological advances which have taken place in various countries of the world have lowered the cost of transportation, have lowered the cost of communication and computation to that extent that it is economically feasible for a firm to locate different phases of production in different country. It's not that the whole product is being produced in one country. A heavy production, part material as raw material or component can be made in two or three different countries looking to the comparative advantage. And that is why more and more governments are increasing the liberalization of trade and capital markets and opening up their economies to foreign competition and influence. Like we in India, I recollect 1992, we had a liberalization process started by Dr. Manmohan Singh. There we opened up the economy, capital market, and entire economy was opened up. The import export, foreign trade became very freely, movements were very freely done. All the licenses, etc., etc., barriers were virtually removed. Of course, certain barriers were still there depending on certain exigencies of the country. Yes, developed countries remain the main trading partners of developing countries like India. They are the best markets for exports and imports. Many developing countries are increasing the share of manufactured goods in their exports to developed countries. The most dynamic category of their manufactured exports are labor-intensive, low-knowledge products. As I told you, comparative advantage is where India, we are able to manufacture goods at less than the price which the developed countries are able to manufacture. And therefore, we are the best partners to export to those countries. This allows developing countries to create more jobs and make better use of their abundant labor resources. Many countries have recognized this potential benefit of global integration. As I told you, that we have integrated ourselves globally with other countries and we have liberalized our trade. In the same way, the other countries of the globe have also gone into global integration and have liberalized their trade regimes. A major challenge for transition economy is finding their place in the worldwide division of labor. Now, what is transition economy? Transition economy is when an economy tries to move to the next higher economic level. Like for countries, they would like to have more trade with developing countries and developed countries so that their economies rise from poor to developing. By the same yardstick, developing countries also like to have more trading with developed countries so that the developing countries' economies also rise up to the next higher level. That is how the transition takes place. Exporting of sensitive goods to developed countries are still being impeded. Now, what are sensitive goods? Let us understand that. Sensitive goods are those goods which are required for day-to-day consumptions of the respective country. For example, in India, agriculture product is always sensitive goods for India. Why? Because we have a very large population, mainly reliant on farm produce. And therefore, export of the farm produce to developed countries are being impeded. Quotas are being applied. Licenses are being applied, or some other barrier is being created. Now, other countries, developed countries, don't like these barriers. They don't like it at all. Therefore, there is an organization known as WTO or World Trade Organization, where all countries are members of WTO. And the primary objective of World Trade Organization is that countries should not have protection of their economy. Protection from substantial barriers, especially quotas and licenses. They would like to see that these barriers and quotas are removed. Of course, joining WTO confers rights on transition economies and also requires them to meet certain obligations. For example, we can't give subsidies to our exports. It is objected to by the developed countries. And that is what is controlled by WTO, all types of barriers. Thank you.